someday the high and the mighty will fall. There will be no power brokers, the wall of power will fall. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Wall of Power Radio Hour. This is your host, Paul Metza. For those that have been listening to my show for the last 10 years, 10th anniversary this month, I might add, you know I love my fellow musicians, and especially my fellow musicians that were born and bred in the North Star State of Minnesota. And we've got a great guitarist and songwriter and singer on tonight, a fellow by the name of Tab Lavin. We're going to talk about his time in Minneapolis, coming of age, his move to Nashville, and how the hell he ended up playing guitar for Art Garfunkel of course, the great duo Simon and Garfunkel. We're going to start with a little piece of Tab playing a song you all know with Art Garfunkel on the balcony of Art's apartment in New York City, and then we'll get right in with Tab. But let's listen to this little bit first.
Scarborough Fair, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine. Tell her to make me a cambric shirt, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Without no seam nor need of work, then she'll be a true love of mine. Tell her to find me an acre of land.
Tab Lavin, we've got to thank our mutual friend Corinne Thies for getting you on the show. She's been bugging me for a couple of years, and I'm glad she kept on me. And it's the only reason why it's taken so long is I'm a very disorganized human being, but it's great to finally be talking with you, Tab. How's the weather in Nashville tonight?
It's just a little cool and a little sprinkly here and there, but spring has already sprung here in Nashville. We've had some nice 70 degree days already. So the one thing I like about living down here is we have all four seasons, but the longest season is the nicer season. We get snow once in a while, but it looks beautiful. We take a few pictures and then it melts by the afternoon. So no need to own a shovel down here or a snowblower. I don't miss it.
Well, good for you, Tab. Yeah. I was visiting my buddy Billy Alcorn in Nashville a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I know Billy.
Oh, yeah, and we had a great time. What a lovely city. Not only the great music history, but the Civil War history and more. And the people, as you know, are so friendly down there. So it's got to be a great place to hang out and work. But before we talk about how you got to Nashville, tell us how you started playing guitar. Who was your first influence?
My first influence on guitar were my uncles. They all played guitar. My grandfather on all on my mother's side, they all just had fun playing guitar. My one uncle played banjo and guitar, and I was just totally mesmerized by him. Every time we'd get together, he'd bring his banjo and the family would sing along, you know, and that got me hooked. And then, as I got into my early, I guess I was about 10 or 11 years old, I started playing banjo myself, and then just became a huge fan of John Hartford right around 19, I guess I was probably about 11 years old, 66, and 1966, and, you know, the Gentle on My Mind was his song that he wrote for Glen Campbell, and the Glen Campbell Good Time Hour, and that that just inspired me to really stick with the banjo, and then at the same time playing guitar. And then I also was a big fan of the Beatles, of course, and Simon and Garfunkel, and James Taylor, and a local favorite up there, Michael Johnson, who I got to know very well. And those were really my early influences as far as playing. And mainly I kind of just eventually just graduated just playing guitar the whole time. Though I still do play banjo. And actually, when I was in Minneapolis, still in high school, I was doing studio work down at Cook House and Sound 80. Because there weren't very many banjo players in Minnesota at that time, if you can imagine.
Probably you must have bumped into Jim Tordoff at some point, a great banjo player.
Yeah, he was a great banjo player. And so I think between he and I, we were both kind of covering all the studio work banjo-wise down there. But, I played on some Levi County Seat commercials and some snowmobile commercials, whatever, for at Cook House, mainly for Dale Menton at that time.
Sure.
Jim Tordoff was also, and I looked up to him because he was a better banjo player than I was, and I just was kind of in awe of him as well. And I'm not sure, I never really knew him that well, and I'm assuming that he's still playing somewhere up there.
He's around, he's having a bit of physical disability, so I'm not exactly sure if he's playing steadily, but I interviewed him when we did my book with Rick Shevchik, Blood in the Tracks, the Minnesota musicians behind Dylan's masterpiece, because he was the guy. He got a call from Chris Weber, who you remember, who ran the podium, to show up at Sound 80 Studio to do a recording with a fella that wasn't mentioned by name, who of course turned out to be Bob Dylan. Peter Ostruschko, the buddy you played with in Glory Line. It was his first time in a recording studio with his great all-time hero, Bob Dylan. I had the pleasure of opening up for John Hartford in St. Cloud. Jeez,
lucky you.
Just a year or two before he passed. And people that aren't old enough to remember Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, how good he was, what a great songwriter he was. He also, of course, was a steamboat captain. And I've got actually a record, a CD in my desk that he signed to me that I bought at that performance. He also had great calligraphy.
Yeah.
And they were off, and he literally passed less than 2 years later. But I know they were on their way to the Baraboo, Wisconsin, to the Ringling Barnum and Bailey Circus Museum, because of course, John loved Americana. Now here's something you might not know, Tab. I found when I was doing my research about the great Bill Hinckley. Now you probably bumped into Bill Hinckley and Judy Larson at some point.
Yeah, I didn't know them. I knew who they were, but they were definitely around that whole Dinkytown area. The Union. What was the coffee house?
There was originally it was the Scholar Coffee House, and then the Hole Coffee House.
The Hole,
And then of course the Extempore. Yep. But here's what I found out when I wrote an obit for Mr. Hinckley in the Star Tribune. John Hartford and Bill Hinckley went to the same grade school in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Which explains something. I'm not sure what, but I don't know if they went exactly at the same time, although they were about the same age, but two of the greatest American musicians ever. Yeah. So,
absolutely.
Okay, so you're getting... you're starting to play around Minneapolis. You're starting to play at Sound 80, Cookhouse, doing demos, I'm sure, and back when there was a lot of work for ad agencies. A lot of ads were being cut in town with musicians like yourself and Tordoff, and, of course, the great Lonnie Knight, who I'm sure you've picked with at some sessions. So what bands did you start playing with?
Well, I just when I was, I guess I had just turned 19 or 20, and actually really didn't play in a band. I was trying to put something together, and then I had a chance, an opportunity to go out to Los Angeles. A good friend of my parents named Keith Christensen, he was a music manager. And he,
oh, yeah, I know who Keith was.
Yeah, Keith was like my mentor. He just took me under his wing, and I worked at his Projects 4 management office with Doug Lee. I don't know if you knew Doug Lee at the time. He was a big record promo guy. What's that?
Yeah, I knew the name Doug Lee. Now, who else did Keith work with back then?
He was managing Michael Johnson. He was managing Mark Gatiss at that time.
Sure.
And then Mary McGregor, who was from St. Paul. And Mary was a background singer for Peter Yarrow, Peter, Paul, and Mary. And Peter had written a bunch of female-type songs, like a side project. And he asked Mary if she would go in the studio and record them, which she did. And one of those songs that he wrote, most people don't know that he wrote the song Torn Between Two Lovers. It was written by Peter Yarrow. Yeah, and she went and recorded it, and somehow the record got to somebody out in Los Angeles, and they just kind of did a trial run and released some stations, and it just became a huge hit, and it went all the way to number one in 1977.
Wow.
Yeah, so I went out there as Keith just called, if you want to come out, she's going to do the Tonight Show, and you can come to the rehearsal and then go to the taping and the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. So, and he had just bought a new car in Minneapolis. It's kind of a long story. He had just bought a brand new car in Minneapolis, but he wanted me to drive his car out to LA for him, so he didn't have to rent cars, which I did. And, drove out there and, ended up going to the rehearsal, and I had my guitar with me. And in the rehearsal, the guitar player was an electric guitar player, and he said, well, this is kind of all acoustic guitar bass, and I don't play acoustic guitar. And Mary, who kind of knew me a little bit, jokingly said, Tab, you play acoustic guitar, don't you? And I said, yeah, I actually do. And I had already heard some of the songs from an old acetate that Keith had given me. When I say old, they used to do record acetates as opposed to like demo tapes and stuff, and
sure,
then just play it. And so I had the acetate of most of her songs from that first album, and I had already learned all the guitar parts. So I just went and got my guitar, which I had with me, and sat in at the rehearsal. And I believe it was 2 days later, I'm sitting next to Doc Severinsen on the Tonight Show.
Wow.
And he's counting off Torn Between Two Lovers. And so that was really my first gig, was playing in the band with Mary McGregor on the Tonight Show. And
is that can that be? Can you find that clip on YouTube?
No. I've looked for it, and it just does not exist. And at that time, I guess they would record over some of the old shows, or some
right
of the tapes got destroyed. Yeah, and I've searched in vain for it, but I was never on camera. You know, you're over in the orchestra. It didn't have the bands on stage with the singer anyway.
Right.
So, but anyway, so then I ended up playing with her for 4 or 5 years and traveled the world based on that one number one hit. She had a few other smaller hits. So that was, and then after that, I moved back to Minneapolis and I started a band with the ex lead singer of the Daisy Doman Band, Pat Frederick.
Love Pat.
Yeah, Pat's great. He and I started a duo, and it quickly turned into a band called Samoa, and that was kind of went from being kind of a James Taylor instrumental Jean-Luc Ponty, because he was playing violin and I was doing acoustic guitar, and then it became kind of a at that time what do you call it, that light jazz thing, jazz fusion, I guess, back then.
Yeah.
It was kind of popular, and I think both Pat and I were in it for about a year, and then I moved on and he moved on, but it was a successful band for a while. I think Steve Fazin was the lead singer, and I think even Ricky Peterson played piano for a bit in it, and Michael Hurley on drums, and it was a cool little band. And then after that, I played on and off with Michael Johnson when he would do performances. I played with him at the Guthrie and at the Northrop Auditorium and Orchestra Hall, and played on his second record, For All You Mad Musicians, played banjo on that record, just on one song with him, and did quite a few shows with him, just as the second guitarist and backup singer with him. And then we Pat and I got back together to start our duo up again, and actually played for 2 or 3 years doing the duo all around Minnesota. We were like up at Arrowhead Resort, whatever that is, up in Alexandria, and places like that. And then we joined forces with Mary Jane Ulm and her band, and that was a fun band. It had Scooter Nelson on drums and Brian Peters on guitar, and then after that, I played with Lori Lyon for about 4 years.
Wow!
And I was.
You and I are about the same age, and all of these names, I know a lot of these folks. Of course, Mary Jane Alma is still playing. I got to tell you a fun little story. You've been in the music biz about as long as I have. It sounds like we're about the same age. But I remember when musicians get around and talk about reviews they've gotten, and most of the time we're all dissing music critics. Mark Gatiss put out a record back, vinyl record in the late 70s, early 80s. He put out that same record with a different cover a few years later, and it got reviewed, and I don't know if it was Sweet Potato or something, but this always gave me a great glimpse into the mind of a music critic. Although it was the same record that he had put out 2 years before, the reviewer said, I really enjoyed this record, and it's a vast improvement over his last one. We've got Tab later.
Yeah.
Whole show tonight. We're going to talk music all day and night long here on the Wall of Power Radio R, and very excited to hear how he got to be anointed and be Art Garfunkel's guitar player. So stick around. We'll be back with two more segments with Mr. Tab Lavin.
Wall of Power Radio Hour.
Welcome back to the Wall of Power Radio Hour. This is your host, Paul Metza. We've got Tab Lavin, guitarist, Minnesota born and bred, musician now living in Nashville. Say, Tab, I forgot to ask you, where were you born? What town did you grow up in?
I was born in Minneapolis.
Okay.
And then we lived in Minnetonka, and I went to Wayzata my whole school career from kindergarten up to Wayzata High School graduating. Barely graduated, I might add. How I pulled that off, I have no idea, because all I cared about was playing my guitar.
Right.
I didn't go to college at all. No, I didn't really go to college. Yeah, I didn't go to college. So, I got the thing with Mary McGregor right away, so I got lucky on that.
What did your mom and dad do?
My mom was just a mom and a housewife. and my dad, he ran a company called Duffy Paper Company. They're down on Washington Avenue, which is now,
sure,
I think, condos.
I used to drive by it all the time. I know exactly where it was.
Yeah, he was like sales manager, then he became vice president, then he was president, and retired doing that. And now he's still around. He's 96 years old in a few weeks. I'm actually going to fly up to Minnesota for his birthday. He lives up outside of Brainerd in Cross Lake, Minnesota.
That's fantastic.
So I'm going to celebrate his 96. My mom passed away probably 6-7 years ago.
Well, your dad's going to love to see you, and I'm sure he's proud of your career. I remember when I was young buck playing guitar, and my dad always would take me aside and, I said, I'm thinking about becoming a professional musician. And Dad would go, well, it's a good avocation, but it's not a great vocation. And now 40-something years later, I think he had a point.
Yeah.
But,
well.
Okay. So now it must have been, I mean, you, that's like kind of a supersonic on steroids career trajectory to go not long after high school to being on the freaking Tonight Show, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. What was it like being backstage on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show?
That was, it was like surreal because I used to watch that as a kid and I loved Johnny Carson. I loved his humor and, you know, every night watching Johnny Carson and there I am, you know, when you go in those sound stages, they're just big cavernous buildings and the sets are all pushed off to the side. So when they do the show, it all comes and links up together and it's all kind of in the middle of this huge, soundstage warehouse and they bring the bleachers in and, you know, it's totally whacked out when you see it, you know,
and I
remember walking around, we got there early and, remember just walking around and, I think I can't remember cause I did a lot of those. I did like the Dinah Shore show and Mike Douglas and the Merv Griffin show.
Wow.
So I'm kind of probably confusing all those cause it would just be me on acoustic guitar. She wouldn't take the whole band with her on a lot of these things. The Tonight Show was the band, but, you know, with the Tonight Show band, but, the other thing is she would just bring me along and I'd sit off camera and play acoustic guitar and she'd sing, excuse me. And, but it was cool just to kind of go and look behind the Hollywood Squares set, you know, where they all sat and there was, and each cubicle behind that you couldn't see on TV, but there'd be half empty drinks with limes in it and ashtrays for cigarette butts. And it's like, they were partying back then. It was just pretty wacky to see. And the old Wheel of Fortune set and, That was the coolest part for me, just to see all the stuff that you've watched for years and to be able to actually sit in some of the seats, you know, where these stars.
I'm sure there was one more than one empty cocktail plastic cup by Paul Lindsay. He was my favorite.
Oh, my God, yeah. But it was hilarious. Because I'm sure these guys were just half in the bag when they're doing the show, you know, just judging by the amount of plastic cups with straws in them, you know, empty. But to be behind the scenes, and I remember I was in the doorway, standing next to a doorway waiting. I think I was waiting for somebody to come by and get me, and the door opened, and it was Johnny Carson, and he walked out and just stood next to me because he was waiting for somebody to come by and get him, and he was just in makeup, and he just looked at me, and I just kind of nervously shook my head, and he just said hi, you know, and then he was gone, you know, so it was. That was my only brush with him, which was pretty incredible. I was just like speechless, like there he is, you know.
I remember an interview with Johnny Carson, and he was always so impeccably dressed. And he said once he put on his trousers for the show, he would not sit down until he did his monologue and then sat down behind the desk. And I thought, that's a professional.
Absolutely.
So now, what is? Are you in touch at all with Mary McGregor?
I talked to her every once in a while. We've done a few shows with Art. I've been out in San Luis Obispo at the college out there, and she's in. I don't think she came to Santa Barbara, but I've been out there twice doing shows, and she would come with some of her friends, and we're still friends stay in touch. I think we're friends on Facebook, and she's married and lives on a horse ranch up outside of San Luis Obispo.
How cool. Now, okay, so the big question, how did you end up being the guitar player for the great Art Garfunkel?
Well, you know, I said earlier that I learned how to play guitar on Simon and Garfunkel records, just lifting that needle up, and, you know, this is before YouTube and all that. You had to learn the hard way, and it was probably the best way to learn, too. It was just determination to learn these songs and no visual. You know, you weren't able to look at it on YouTube or anything, so you just had to learn by ear, which is how I learned how to play guitar. And I think while I was playing with Lori Lyne, I was at home watching TV by myself, and this show came on. I think it was on PBS, and it was Art Garfunkel with his band. It was like an hour-long special, and Eric Weisberg was playing guitar at that time with him. And I remember watching the show, and they did a close-up of Eric playing, and I out loud, I swear this is true, out loud to myself, I said, "That's my gig."
Wow.
Because I thought I can play it better than he can, you know, because I knew these songs through and through. And at that time, I knew nobody associated in his world whatsoever. You know, he's a New Yorker, and nobody I knew had any connection to him. And that was like in 1997. And then in 99, I moved to Nashville, got a writing deal, which didn't come to anything. But I met a singer-songwriter down there, was introduced to this guy, and you know, I said, so what are you doing? What do you have, any hits or anything? He said, well, right now I'm in the studio with Art Garfunkel. He came in from New York, and we're recording here, and I'm working on some songs with him. And right away I went, wow, you know, is there any way I can go with you? I'd love to meet him, because I'm a huge, huge fan of his. And he just said, no, he's not really like that. And he just doesn't like people around when he's recording. And so I said, okay, well, that's cool. And realizing this is my only chance, I said, can I give you my name and number just in case there's a situation where I can just show up? If he's like out somewhere, I can just be a germ and go up and say hi, whatever.
Hey, let me jump in here, Tab. Germ. I heard that term when I was in Nashville. We'll talk to the people out there in the Wall of Power radio land that came Loretta Lynn, and there was something about backstage about germs, and she mispronounced it at germs, and that's referred to, Billy Alcorn told me this, that people that are trying to get in a star's face or something like that. Am I correct with that?
Yep. You are correct.
I haven't heard it since Nashville. Beautiful. Anyway, so
yeah, that's what it means. Well, so anyway, so I say, is there any way I can give you my name and number? And if you ever hear that he's looking for a guitar player, I would love to be able to just put my name in the hat and have a chance to audition for him. And he goes, well, okay, you know, just kind of blew it off. I said, okay, give me your, you know, how the old Nashville two-step. Oh yeah, sure, I'll give it to him. And so I got like a napkin out of the kitchen where we were at and just wrote my name and just my cell number. And he stuck in his shirt pocket. And I said goodbye. And later that day, I swear to God, the phone rang. And it's this friend that I had met, Buddy, is his name, Buddy Motlock. And he said, you're not going to believe this, but when I went to the studio after I left you, the first thing Art said to me was, do you know any guitar players in town that might be interested in doing this gig?
Wow.
And I swear, it happened exactly like that. And he goes, well, as a matter of fact, and he reached in his pocket and took out this nappy. He said, I just met this guy today, and he said he would love to have a chance to audition for you.
Oh, fantastic.
And Art took it, and 2 days later, the phone rings, and the voice is, Tab, this is Art Garfunkel. I heard that you're interested in maybe auditioning for me. You know, I mean, it was that stupidly simple.
Wow.
And I just, you know, from me saying that in Minneapolis, like, that's my gig, I believe I just sent it out in the universe, and it came around, and it hit him, you know, and like it was meant to be. The planets just all clicked into place. And just a few years ago, I read an interview where the interviewer asked Art, you know, how did you meet your guitar player? And Art said, I don't know, I guess we were just on the same wavelength or something, you know, it just clicked, you know.
And that's like the musical equivalent of being discovered at Schwab's drugstore, and the next thing you know,
exactly,
you're starring in a movie. We've got Tab Lavin on the show tonight. I'm really enjoying the chat. I hope you are as well. We're going to listen to one of Tab's songs and then come back. I've got a few more Garfunkel questions, and then we'll talk about Tab's solo and band career as well. Here's a song Tab Lavin wrote and recorded called Mesmerized. We'll be back one more set with Tab Lavin.
Like the spell we all fall under, staring into a fire. We're drawn in by some ancient desire no one can explain.
or the subtle pull we feel standing at the edge of the sea. Why the rolling of the waves sets us free, no one can explain. Or like the trance that I fall into at the mention of your name, why I become a moth to a flame. I get mesmerized, hypnotized, lost in love that mystifies. And when you pass by, even angels sigh. Every time.
Welcome back to the last set of the Wall of Power Radio Hour. This is your host, Paul Metza. Our guest for the whole show tonight, a man I'm looking to meet in person. We've got a lot in common, Mr. Tab Levin, guitarist, vocalist, and songwriter. We just heard, going out of that last segment, a song of his called Mesmerized. We'll play another song of his and talk about his own music. But, Tab, I've got a couple more questions about Art Garfunkel. Now, didn't he at some point in his life really get into walking?
Yes. He one day left his apartment up in Upper East Side. He lives right across the street from Central Park. And it was a beautiful day. He walked, and he started walking and ended up going over the Washington Bridge, whatever that's called, the George Washington Bridge, which is the big one that goes over the Hudson, and ended up on the other side. And he called his wife. He said, I'm over here. I think it's the Lee or something like that. I don't remember the name of the town, but he checked into the hotel because it was getting dark. He said, I think I'm going to walk again tomorrow and just keep going that way. And that started his walk across America. He literally went from New York City and would do it in segments. He'd maybe walk for a week or two and then rent a car and drive home, or he'd get on take a cab to the airport. But he did it in, it's like 20 or 30 or 40 segments, and he walked all the way across and would start where he left off at some mile marker and walked all the way to, I believe, up by Portland.
Wow, what an incredible story, and what a unique individual. Now, I was reading not long ago that he wrote The Sounds of Silence because he had a friend of his in college that went blind.
Paul wrote the song, but his art's best friend, and I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. He's a big wig in D.C. He's been totally blind. He went blind while he was in college, and Art helped him. So supposedly, I wish I could remember the guy's name, but anyway, I think he said that phrase, "Hello, darkness," to my old friend, but he was.
Wow.
Meaning pertaining that to Art, but Art just kind of helped him adapt to his new life of going blind, and they're still great friends. I think they talk once a week, and I know him fairly well, even though I can't remember his name right now, but he usually comes to shows when we're on the East Coast somewhere with his wife and they're best friends. So
when was the last time you played a gig with Art Garfunkel?
I played one probably, actually, not that long ago. His son and his wife were doing a performance at this little club owned by Valerie Simpson of Ashford and Simpson.
Wow,
Simpson.
Cool. Yeah, right.
They have a club over on the West Side. I think his name was Nick Ashford, but he passed away a few years ago. But Valerie still has this little club, and Art's wife is friends of hers, so they had this little band, and they. And I accompanied Art's son, Junior, on some songs, and then Art got up and sang a few songs. But before that, the other gig we did, maybe a year previous to that, was at Clive Davis's 90th birthday party. It was like a who's who of show business. We're there in New York City, and I'm looking out, and there's Robert De Niro, and there's Judy Collins, there's Clive, and every famous person, it seemed, was there honoring his 90th birthday. And David Foster was the leader, kind of the MC, and I shared a dressing room with Dionne Warwick and Barry Manilow and, you know, Art, of course, and the Earth, Wind, and Fire. You know, it was kind of one of those things where you're going, what am I doing here? You know, just and able to talk to them all, and they're all super nice people. And but we just went out and did just a couple verses of Bridge Over Troubled Water. And he really hasn't, since when the pandemic came, you know, everybody got off the road, and he never really got back on the road after that, just because he's he had some health problems. He's better now, and he's, I actually just talked to him last week, and he wants to try to get together and start working on some music and getting back out there more on a limited basis. You know, I've been with him for 22 years, so it's been a long run, you know, and he's, I think, turning 82 or 83 this next year. So he's getting older.
Well,
we all are, you know.
You know,
yeah,
Paul McCartney told me once never to drop names, but Tab, you can drop every name you want. I'm so amazed at your career.
Well,
so let's take a right turn here and talk a little bit about, we're going to listen at the end of this segment to a song that Art sings with you called Cranberry Red Balloon. So when did you start recording your own stuff, and where are you performing now? And tell us all about the world of Tab Leavin.
Well, it's a very short story. You know, when I was in Minneapolis, when I was playing with Mary Jane Alm and that band, we did two or three children's records as the Minneapolis Workshop for Kids, I think it was called. And when I would contribute one or two songs. And when I had moved down to Nashville, I was talking to a friend of mine's wife who was in the, I think she was a song plugger or something. But anyway, she wanted to hear anything that I had written, and which I gave her some of these kids' CDs. And she said, I love your children's songs. You should just cut a children's record of your own. So I thought, okay, I've never really had thought about that. And So I went in the studio and wrote some more songs, and one of the songs was called Cranberry Red Balloon. And my wife, who helped kind of co-produce the record, she said, you should try to have Art sing harmony on this. And I thought, I'm not going to ask Art to sing harmony on the record. And unbeknownst to me, she called Art, because Art loves my wife. And she called him. We're talking like in 2011, I think. And just asked if he'd be interested, if he would consider singing on my record. And he goes, absolutely, you know. So
oh
she told goodness. Me that. I was like blown away. It's like, wow, okay, I would have never done that, but that's great. So he said, let me hear the song first, but don't be mad if I say, no, I'm not interested. And I said, no, absolutely, you know. And he called me a week later, and he just said, you got me, Tab, you got me. I've been listening to your song, and I love it, and I'd be honored to sing on it. And he flew to Nashville. No, actually, we recorded in New York. I recorded all my stuff in here in Nashville, but he recorded his vocal there, and then he sent it back, and we just kind of mixed it into it and fine tuned it and all that stuff. And it's the title track of the record, which was, I think we released it in 2011, and it did okay. You know, it's just the children's market. You know, I just kind of recorded it, but I had no really intention of going out and touring, like doing children's shows. And it just wasn't my deal. And because I was so busy at that point traveling with Art, you know, we go all over the world with Art. So it's like you're always traveling, you know.
Right.
So I just didn't have the time to organize any kind of a kids thing, which, again, I really wasn't that interested in doing. But we released the album, and it sold fairly well.
Tab, two questions. What's your website? Uh-huh. And secondly, what does a week look like in Tab Leavin's life in Nashville, Music City?
Well, my website is just my name, Tab, TABLAV as in Victor, EN.com, TabLaven.com. And it's got a lot of great pictures of Art and myself, and then a lot of pictures that I've taken on the road, and it's got some newsletters. It hasn't been updated in a few years, just because we haven't been on the road, and there's really nothing to report. But my wife says I should still put something out every few months. But And I got a couple original songs. I think there's a short in the video section of it. There's a scene of a film of me playing with Mary McGregor back in like 1982 at Red Rocks in outside of Denver with John McEwen on mandolin and Mark O'Connor on violin and Mary McGregor and myself singing Torn Between Two Lovers in front of, which is was a great experience to play at that venue. So,
you've had an incredible career, and I so appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and everybody out there,
I look forward.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I look forward to getting up there and meeting you in person. And like I told you, I know you told me that you moved to a different location, but my brother and my sister are up where you're living as well. So, love to
Come on Wednesday. I've got a really nice gig every Wednesday, easy at 6 to 8, place called the Blackwater Lounge. I'd be honored to have you sit in with me, truly.
Cool. I look forward to it.
And I'm buying drinks and dinner. Tab Lavin.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, this has been fantastic. I look forward to meeting you. We're going to listen to Cranberry Red Balloon by Tab Lavin with the great Art Garfunkel on harmony vocals. Tab, you have a great night and week, and let's get together when you're in town.
Absolutely. I look forward to it, Paul, and thanks so much for inviting me.
Oh, you are so welcome. And let's thank Corinne Thies for getting it together.
I've been chasing a cranberry red balloon, jumping and racing through town all afternoon. Across the boulevard, past the junkyard, and the dog as it barks. Down alleyways, under skyways, through the pigeons in the park. I just can't grab the string off the cranberry red balloon. I'm beginning to think it's easier to rope the moon. On my tiptoes, then the wind blows, and it's lost in the trees. Then it sails.
Thanks for listening to the Wall of Power Radio Hour. The show is produced by Paul Metza, engineered by the great Patrick Lilia. We'd like to thank our guest, Tab Lavin. Check him out at tablavin.com. Celebrating the 10th anniversary of the Wall of Power Radio Hour, this weekend we're going to have a bash somewhere, so I'll keep you posted. You can follow me at paulmetza.com. Get my book and record wherever those things are sold. And like my dad used to tell me, remember to be kind and make someone happy.